So, as many of you know, it's Father's Day, and it's the day that we are recognizing three of those that are in grade 12 and graduating this June. So, I was going to share a couple things. I'll start off with fathers, and it's very short, but it's in 1 Peter 5, and it's not talking so much about fathers, but I think there's a principle here that I really liked that I saw in the scripture here a few months back. Here it's really talking about the church in chapter 5, 1 Peter 5, 1. It says, "The elders who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also of the partaker of the glory that shall be revealed." So when I think of elders, I think of them as being like supposedly more mature. That's what they should be. They should be more mature in the body and giving direction to the spiritual family that's right here in local bodies. Elders should be more mature and they should be giving direction, kind of like in a family. And so that's where I see a parallel here to fathers. In our homes as dads, we should be giving spiritual direction and direction in the home. How should that be done? It says here in verse 2, "Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly." I was thinking, as dads, we're supposed to be shepherds in our home. Why are we shepherding our children? So they all line up and look good on the outside? Or is it for our own gain? Or are we giving instruction and teaching because we're really concerned about their souls? We want to see them do well. Verse 3, "Nor is being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock." And so obviously we can see that very much in a spiritual sense in a body, in a church, but even in the home. Are we just shouting commands and they obey just because we're so loud and forceful? Or is it because of the love that we have for them? It says here that we ought to be examples to the flock. I was thinking we should be examples in our home. I shared this with a brother a couple of months back. I think some men get married and they have this idea that everyone just has to do what they say because they're the man of the house. And I love this example here. As fathers, we should be examples. What are we doing? We should be leading our home in serving, leading our home in doing the jobs that need to get done, leading our home in patience and long-suffering and mercy, extending mercy and forgiveness. That's how we should be leading our home. And you know what? Words will come, but it's primarily in the way we conduct our lives, how we spend our time. I was thinking about that, and I was a little bit convicted about that. How am I spending my time? I should be a leader by example that my children can follow after. And so I like that. So that was a little bit I had for fathers. But it's Father's Day, and it seems to be a day where most of the time people want to recognize their dads. And they want to maybe write them a note to encourage them, or they want to give them a gift to bless them, which are nice things. But I think there's one thing that if your dad is a Christian and loves Jesus, there's one, the greatest gift you can give him. And it talks about it in 3 John. And this is also, I think, applicable to all of us that have a father, but I also think that as grads, then they're coming to this place in their life where some of them are going to be heading out of the home for the first time for an extended period of time, or it's definitely a season where things start to change and you start to have more opportunity to make different choices and opportunity to actually see your faith, maybe even come more of your own because you're going to face different tests. There's a verse here. Verse 3, it says, "For I rejoice greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in the truth." And so, as John is writing this to Gaius, who is like his spiritual son, he's saying, "I've heard testimony of you, my son. People have come and testified of the truth that is in you. I have no greater joy," John says, "than to hear that you're walking in truth." And as a dad, that is the thing that gives me the greatest joy. This morning, I got a card and I got to unwrap something, but I shared this verse And I said, I wasn't sure if I was going to be sharing this morning or not, but I said, this is what I might share. But I said, you know what? This is the greatest thing. I said, it's not how smart you are, how fast you are, how high you can jump, how many degrees you're going to get, all these things, and how much money you're going to have and how successful you're going to get. It doesn't matter a dime in comparison to this. This is what matters the most, is to hear that my kids are walking in the truth. So if you want to give your dad a gift, seek to do this. There is nothing that will give us greater joy than to hear that our kids love Jesus with all their heart. That is the key. And so I kind of wanted to look at that. What does it mean to walk in the truth? So there's a verse here, which, well, I won't even turn to it. John 14:6. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Jesus is the truth. And so in other words, you're walking in Jesus. You're walking with Jesus. That's one thing I think it can mean. Second thing it could mean would be in John 17. We'll turn there. John 17, verse 13. It says, this is Jesus speaking to his disciples, and it says, John 17, 13. It says, but now I come to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word. And the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. It's kind of interesting. Let's keep going. It says, they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. And as you have sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified by the truth. So, what does it mean to walk in the truth? It says, your word is truth. It's his word that sanctifies us. What does that mean? To be set apart from the world. And when I say the world, what do I mean? I mean those that are practicing evil around us. And I also will include those that confess Jesus with their lips, but they still are walking according to the patterns of the world. And you know what it says? It says the world hated them. I have a question for you. Who hated Jesus the most? I would venture to say I think it was the Pharisees. The ones that essentially had a religious showing. Today it's those who profess his name, but they don't love his word. And you'll face, that's where that, what Joel is talking about. Some of the friends that Joel lost were people that still went to church on Sunday morning, right? And this, that's where you're going to be. Are you willing to be set apart by the truth? One day, right? Are your parents going to hear that testimony that there's that truth in you? Man, that you're walking in the truth. Guaranteed, if you're walking on that path, there's going to be a separation. There's a setting apart. There's a sanctifying. That's what it means. To be sanctified means to be made holy or being made holy or to be set apart. Set apart from what? From the world and the lust of it, right? You're being set apart. You want to please your Father? Walk in the truth. Right? Number three, third point. So there's walking with Jesus. There's walking according to his word. There's another passage here in John 16. I'm going to start in verse 8. It says, and when he has come, he will convict the world of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. What's it talking about? It's talking about the Helper, the Holy Spirit, when he comes. In verse 13, it says, however, when he, that's the Spirit of truth, has come, he will guide you into all truth, for he will not speak on his own authority, but whatever he hears, he will speak, and he will tell you things to come. He will glorify me, for he will take of what is mine and declare it to you. All things that the Father has are mine. Therefore, I said that he will take of mine and declare it to you. A little while, and you will not see me, and again a little while, and you will see me, because I go to the Father. So he's going to declare the truth to us, but he's also going to do something to us. What's he going to do? He's going to bring conviction. And the reason I say this is because as we come to this, as we get older, our faith needs to become our own. We need to hear from the Spirit. And he should be convicting us of what is right to do. He should also be convicting us of what is sin, so that we don't do those things. And I think he's also going to convict us of that there's a judgment coming. And so we live seeking to always please God, because we know that our time here is short. And I say this because as young people, and we come to that age, and like I think it ties into the grads, but many of you, we're coming to that age where we have to start to, our faith needs to become our own. And my question is, those convictions that you have, I've heard this said, well, you know, my convictions aren't always the same as my parents. You know, mine aren't either. But this is the challenge I have for you. Where are those convictions coming from? Have you been seeking God and saying, Lord, show me. Lord, convict me of what is right. Convict me of what is wrong. Lord, I want to be led by your Spirit. Are those convictions at a higher standard than you've been taught, or a lower standard? Are you like, I don't feel convicted. Are those convictions making you more like the world, or are those convictions making you more like Jesus? We need to question. If I don't have any conviction and I can go do what the world does that mean that that's God leading me that way? Or do I need to get on my knees with God and say, God, get a hold of my life. I need you to lead me and guide me. Ideally, it would bring me no greater joy than to see that my children have their own convictions that are leading them into righteousness. There's another verse here. It's in Revelation chapter 4, and I kind of like a phrase within it. Says something here. Verse 1, it says, after these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard was like a trumpet speaking with me, saying, come up here, and I will show you things which must take place after this. Immediately I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. You probably know who was sitting on the throne in heaven. There was a voice saying, come up here. This is the voice we want to hear. One that causes us to come out of setting our mind on earthly things, and one that brings us up to a heavenly perspective and allows us to see things. So when we're off traveling the world, or we're off at university, we're at doing some of these things, we're not getting our conviction based on those around us, which is kind of bringing us down. But we're listening to a different voice that causes us to come up higher. And we see the things around us with a new set of eyes, and we realize, man, there's a leavening here that's taking place sometimes. Lord, I need to hear your voice. I need to hear your voice so that I might be able to be coming up higher, seeing things from a totally different perspective. We don't compare ourselves among ourselves, but Lord, you're the one I'm seeking to please, like Joel said. Lord, what's your standard? Let's make sure that we're hearing his voice, that he's the one who's convicting us of what is right and what is wrong, and we're not being kind of leavened out, and his voice is becoming harder and harder to hear because we're looking unto men, but rather come up higher. Let's hear that voice. And if we're not hearing it, say, God, call me up, Lord. Let us come up higher. And I'm going to share another verse here in Proverbs. It's about this coming up higher. Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15:24. It says, in the way of life winds upward for the wise, that he may turn away from hell below. Is that a description of your life? Is it that we're hearing this voice and come up higher? Is our life winding ever upward, becoming more and more like Jesus? Or is it kind of becoming more and more like the world, which here it describes as hell below, right? What should it be? It should be one that is becoming more like Christ. We're being transformed from glory to glory. Is your speech becoming more like Jesus? Less outbreath of wrath, right? More patience, more graciousness? Or is it becoming more like the world? Let me tell you, you're going down toward, what does it say? Hell below, right? What are the things we're seeking after? And so there is a time, I think of the grads, as you're kind of coming to that age where some of you are going to be going to different lands, some are going to different schools. You know what? God has appointed this time. But come with it comes a new freedom. But it's a freedom that we have to take carefully, because some people use that freedom, it says, to live for the flesh. And others use that freedom to serve God through love, right? Lord, now my faith has to become, I got more freedom. Lord, I don't have to do these things because mom and dad are saying it, but I need to do these things because you're convicting me of what is right and what is wrong. Lord, let my faith become my own. Lord, I want to grow. I want to become more like you. I think this is an opportunity. And so I want to encourage every one of the youth, but specifically the grads, make it your aim and your goal that at the end of, let's say, another 12 months, we should take stock. Say, Lord, have I grown in my walk with you? Am I becoming more like Christ rather than the opposite? And just so you know, it seems like one of the two happen. We don't just stay stagnant. Either we're growing toward him or we're growing, becoming more like the world. It's going to be one or the other. Anyways, with that in mind, I'd like to maybe have the grads come up and maybe share 1 minute or 2 minutes, just what your plan is in the next year. And then I'd like to give opportunity for those in the body that would like to maybe pray for one of them or share a verse to do so. And I do, everyone's at a different place, but I can just say for those that are, I'm coming to that place where I've had one already kind of do these things and I can see others getting close, we need to pray, because there's a battle that takes place. And we need to uphold them in prayer, because we want to see them do well, right? We don't want to see them go through some of the same struggles and pitfalls that we went through. We want to see the Lord keep them from those things, right? And live an overcoming life. And so maybe if the grads are willing to come up, maybe come up here. If you stand on the bottom here, I can get a mic and you could just share for a minute. So maybe that'd be great if Elizabeth and Berklin and Rebecca, if they could come up, that would be fantastic.